Hey everybody, welcome to the Green Architects Lounge podcast. This is Chris Briley, I'm your host, and with me again...
Phil Kaplan, your other host. Hey Chris, how are you today?
I'm great. I feel like I don't know.
$100?
$100. I feel like $100.
Excellent. Congratulations.
Maybe $110. But yeah. And this is a different drink we're having. Let's get right to it.
You don't even want to talk about what the topic of the podcast is.
We'll get to that. But yeah, this drink.
You're excited about this, I can tell.
Well, I just got done pouring it, so, and we're back to our mugs. But this is mug worthy. I mean,
it's mug worthy.
Yeah, and we're having good old fashioned beer. You know, it's not a cocktail, but more than just regular beer. This is from the Marshall Wharf. Brewing company in Belfast, Maine. This was given. You want to hear the story behind this?
I'd love to.
All right, this is a growler. When you guys who are out there, you builder types who are into the PBR thing and the cans, let me explain what a growler is. Not that I'm slaying.
That was really
no. Yes. Look. You know, PBR is like the builder's choice. I mean, I just see it all the time. It's good. I'm not slamming them. I think that's great. I can't drink Miller Lite though. There's something about my brother like. Loves Miller Lite.
Dan's going to hear this, and he's going to come right after you.
I know. Bring it. I'm ready. No, it's like something. There's something in there that hurts my tummy.
Miller Lite, really?
Yeah, I don't know what it is.
You're a sensitive little flower, though.
I am a sensitive little flower. But this, and did you see the name of that, Phil?
It's Marshall Wharf.
Well, no. The cap, it says Phil Brown Ale.
Yes.
Because I knew you were coming in. No, it's a Philadelphia Brown Ale.
But I thought it was for me.
No, I should have let you believe that for a little bit longer. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
All right. Now, there's a fine fellow I have the pleasure of working with, an Irish gentleman. And he knows I like to do some home brewing and things like that, so...
You're not going to insult him. I mean, you've already gotten
absolutely
the builders...
Absolutely not. In fact...
You insulted builders early here.
Yeah, I did.
He is
more of the builder type. He's the job super kind of thing. But okay. I'll not tolerate a cross word about him.
Excellent.
Fine man who brings me beer.
That did.
And that's high marks. I was going to say, this is a growler, which means it just comes in a big brown jug that's a half gallon.
So. Well, I noticed that the glass on the growler is dark brown.
That's right.
Guess what will not penetrate through dark brown glass?
UV.
That's right.
That's right. In fact...
Yes.
That goes to, God, you are the master of
segues. I knew you were
going to
like that.
Oh, God, that was brilliant. Yeah. We're talking about passive solar design.
That's right.
And, of course, you need to know a lot about your glazing when you're doing that. And so, beer, you know, I don't know if you know this, but, I usually don't buy or drink. Yeah, I'm showing my beer snobbery, but if beer comes in a glass, in a clear or green bottle, you know, like Corona or...
Mexican Budweiser.
Yeah. Right. Or even
you know why they add the lime?
No.
Because it's bad beer and they need to cover up the flavor.
Well, it's the skunkiness. You know that skunky
smell? Don't be sucker.
That's generated by light. That's the processes of the yeast and things in the beer. They're still going through a little photosynthesis with the light. And so they actually generate that skunky smell. Mm-hmm. That's because they put it in a clear bottle.
We're getting ahead of ourselves, Chris. Yeah. But I think an early six-digit idea would be to put the solar heat gain coefficient.
That's right.
On the glass of the beer bottle.
That's right. If we knew what the solar heat gain coefficient was, or the emissivity.
That's right.
You know, then
low E
beer bottles. we ought to do our own. My next home brew. It's going to be low E blend or something like that. We'll put it in the tarp. All right.
So we should actually preface this by saying that. This is probably the least rehearsed we've been for one of these.
I think this is.
And you know what? We haven't been that rehearsed, to tell you the truth, on any of these things. We're trying to keep it casual.
But. Right. But when we get together, we at least have an outline that we go off of that we don't follow. We sit down, we say, here's what we're going to do and talk about. And then we just let the tangents throw us in whatever direction. We try to cover it all frantically.
So we'll see how this one goes.
This one, our outline consists of four things.
But you know, the truth is, the reason we did this is because we both feel very comfortable with passive solar.
Right.
Very it's straightforward stuff.
It is. In fact, it's not even, I would say, someone else coined this, where it's not, we're not really learning passive solar, we're remembering mm-hmm. passive solar. In fact, well, I just said I've got four things. You haven't even seen what they are, you know. So here's a test. Mm-hmm. It's totally unrehearsed. What's the most important thing about, or I've written it down, I'm covering it with my hand. What's mm-hmm. the most important thing about passive solar design to get right?
The orientation of the
orientation. Bing, bing, bing. Let's have a, right. Sheila, can we get a noise? Okay. There it is. Good job. Well done, Phil. Or yeah, I think, yeah. So you want to talk about orientation?
Yeah,
first?
You know, and the thing about passive solar, is it really green design? Is it sustainable design? It's kind of design, isn't it? Isn't it one of the first things that we learn in architecture school?
Yeah, yeah, it's probably the most, in fact, it's the core, I'll go so far, maybe it's the beer talking, but it's probably, we are children of the sun. Gosh, it is the beer talking. God, that sounded awful. I sound like, people are turning off the thing already, like, oh, we are done with these guys.
But I can hear the song in my head. Yeah. That's what's making me cringe.
Wait, let me get my guitar.
No.
Anyway.
Next time.
No, but I mean...
it's a prerequisite, really, for architects. You have to understand...
the effect of light on both your space and yourself. And, like, we are photometric people. Like, if it's almost...
not to mention photogenic.
Of us, buddy.
No, don't look at me.
What were you saying about charm earlier? Anyway, never mind. But no, like there's been all kinds of great little anthropologic experiments where you've got that cafe and you've got that window seat that's in the corner window, and then you've got all these other dark areas and all this stuff, and the window seat's always full, and the others are not. And you've got the Walmart that's lit with natural daylight skylights up above. Do you know about that experiment?
Oh, well, you shouldn't go into them anyway because they're Walmarts.
But when a company like Walmart, which we could go off on, but mm-hmm. when they start to turn that corner and do mm-hmm. something right, we need to recognize that and applaud them for it. So,
yeah, because it drives the industry.
Because it drives
the economy.
Right, yeah, exactly. So they did this experiment where they put it was a retrofit building mm-hmm. where they had skylights on half of this. Imagine a big Walmart. Half of the building is lit with natural daylight mm-hmm. from skylights. Hmm. The other half is all artificial. Guess what? By a factor of like 30%, the sales
increased
in on the daylight half. And then people were like, well, that's because of the region where you are and the products you're selling. Those are the most popular things. They said, great. Well, you know what we'll do? We'll flip. They moved the entire store. They flipped the store in half. They just mirrored the store. The products that were daylit. 30%
really?
Increase. Absolutely.
That is fascinating.
So you could take that to the bank. Mm-hmm. Daylight, we respond to. People respond to it from not just their emotions, but their wallets. Mm-hmm. All right, moving on.
So it's an obvious thing. So you should know these things, but we're going to talk about them a little bit.
Exactly.
Orientation.
So, orientation.
To the south. I mean,
right.
You face orient your building to the south.
We're in the northern hemisphere. And so the sun, of course, is always, almost always. We're so far north, Phil, that in the summertime, the sun actually, before it sets, is just a little bit north of west. So we go, hooray.
You know, yeah. and you know what? I tell my students in this class I teach that you should be able to look at a building and tell which way south is.
That's right. I agree with that. And
if not, you've done something wrong.
Right, and I would wager that if we could go in our time machine, bring some people back from, times of yore. I don't know. Pick a date before industrialization and cars.
1066, Battle of Hastings.
Wow, that was
you like that.
Wow, and you're not even English. That's great.
No,
that's great. Yeah, good one, Phil. Check out the big brain. Anyway, yeah, you bring them back and you show them a building, and they'd be like, "Wow, it's pointed the complete wrong direction." And then they'd be like impressed that I could travel through time. And what is this thing that you think
that might be secondary?
Yeah, it might be secondary to everything else. But I'm like, no, focus. No, put down the phone. Put it down. No, focus. Look at this house. Is it pointed the right direction? You know. Okay. So we want to face south, right? Because mm-hmm. you know, for orientation. Okay, but we ought to clear up, Phil, that when I pull out my compass, it's not facing south, is it?
It's not. It depends on where you are in the country.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah, I was gonna be very regional when I talked about this.
Yeah, but there's north and then there's true north.
Right. There's magnetic north and true north. And magnetic north is really more towards Alaska. I mean, it's not at the North Pole. Like, you make it to the North Pole, your compass is going to be pointing someplace else. But in fact, you're at the North Pole. But so here's my you want to know my mnemonic device when I'm out there sighting a building?
Yeah.
Because you got to do this.
And this is in Maine, right?
Right. This is in Maine. So in Maine, we have our magnetic declination is pretty strong. It's like 16 to 18 degrees. So, and that's a significant amount to be wrong. But like, let's say you're I don't even know. So there's that map, right, that shows you where the magnetic north is.
Yeah.
And it moves, is the thing. It moves with season in the wintertime. So if someone did a map during the summer, then the winter, then they're probably off 2 degrees. Or, you know, most surveys are going to say magnetic north, and there's going to be a date on there. And that's for that. But my mnemonic device, so I go out there, and, you know, you're with a builder, you're with a bunch of people, maybe, or maybe just a builder, maybe a client or something like that. And you're picking out how you're orienting your house. So what I do is I get out my compass, I face south, and then I do the right thing, which means I turn to my right, and I turn the magnetic declination 16 degrees.
Very nice. I like that. That's clever, because I always forget that.
Right. So
it takes me a second.
Right. So if you're listening in the northeast, that's a great little mnemonic device for you. If you're listening from the northwest, boy, you shouldn't listen to me one bit. You know, throw that out and do the left thing. I don't know. Come up with your own or something like that, right? Because it's right. Yeah, because
yeah,
for them,
yeah,
right,
it's,
right?
Yeah, it switches
know.
On the other side of the country.
But basically, you want to orient your building directly south and
what does that mean to orient your building?
Okay, it means we're going to have glazing. We're gonna mm-hmm. the concept of a passive solar design. Is that we're not use and passive versus active, is that passively we're not going to do anything fancy with any kind of moving device.
We don't need to convert that heat into something else before we use it.
We're
like
let
photovoltaics
it happen,
or solar hot water, solar panels are active.
Right. So passive solar. is as the building stands, it's going to take advantage of the sun. That's what we mean with passive solar. So we're going to orient a lot of our glazings to the south. So we can have that greenhouse effect. We can have the light come in, the heat come in, energize the space, heat up the space, and then the sun will set and we'll start the day over and do that over again.
So it's along an east-west axis.
That's right. In fact,
you have an elongated south facade.
Right. And that brings us to the next one, I think, on my list.
Well, yes. what's the percentages? There's a rule of thumb, isn't there? You hear 12%?
Oh, for the shape of your house?
Yeah, the shape of your house.
Yeah, well, actually, okay. Well,
are you getting into that?
I will. Let me back up.
Please. Okay,
I'll back up.
I jumped ahead.
No, you're fine.
Go ahead.
We don't have an outline this time, so
that's right.
It doesn't matter. But the beer's good.
Yes, it is.
So, Phil, the most energy-efficient shape is what? We taught.
The most energy-efficient shape is a sphere.
Exactly. It's a sphere.
Yeah, volume, so Buckminster Fuller was right.
Exactly. Buckminster Fuller tried to use an industrial system.
And I think we've talked about this before, the ratio of the interior volume to the exterior scale.
Exactly. So, there you go. So that's why. So that's the most efficient. The sphere's the easiest shape, the easiest volume to heat and cool, because surface area to volume is the smallest. Surface area to... Yes.
Yeah.
And so the industrialized equivalent of that would be the cube, right? Because it's really hard to draw a sphere and say, build that, Mr. Builder, because then you need something. All right.
Well, take this, Mr. Architect.
Exactly, is the response. Beautiful. But then enter the sun, Phil, because now we have this energy source that we want to take advantage of, and for us here in the north, it's always to the south. So we want to elongate our building along the east-west axis. So there's a certain ratio that you want to hit, and for us, it's about here, and we're about as far north as you get, really, in the country, I guess. It's about 1 to 1.5, as in you want almost a shoebox shape, which is... And I'll even go... because I've had a beer, my theory is that for us, it ought to be the golden section. It ought to be 1 to 1.618 something.
Oh, I think it's beautiful.
You know, I'm going to go off on... No, I won't. I'm not going to go off on a big tangent. Sheila's telling me... She is like, giving me the hand slicing at the neck.
Thing,
like, don't you dare go on a tangent. I'm going to do it. No, I'm not. No, not after that look. No. Okay. So, no tangent there, but I think it should be the gold standard. But actually, as the further south you go, the more you can elongate the building. Basically, what we're doing here is we're trying to equalize the amount of surface area loss that you have of heat, but we want to maximize the amount of gain that we get from the sun. And it turns out that really you want a shoebox shape that's about 1 to 1.5 up here, maybe 1 to 1.3, something like that. And if you start... So if you imagine that house that's pointed the wrong way, it's oriented towards the street, you know, so its shoebox shape has a short end to the south. That's kind of sad. Sad, poor little house. Or even worse, if it's got a lot of boogie-woogie and all that jazz, and all the windows are to the north, and it's, you know, facing the street. It was designed by somebody who really didn't, who forgot about the sun, forgot about humans. Sad. Anyway, so really what you're trying to do is...
Those aliens have to stop designing your houses.
I know. But, and you also want... You know, I think we as people are trending towards a smaller house. You know, these big vinyl box houses that with the rambling on of spaces. Not to totally slam that. I'm really offending people left and right, aren't I?
Yeah, but that's PBR okay. That's your MO.
Gosh, I'm sad. What an elitist I am. I'm an elitist. Anyway, so you want to shrink that size down. Smaller spaces are easier to heat. And if you have the shape right, the amount of gain per volume is going to be about the same. So now let's get into the nitty-gritty, buddy. We're talking about heating the space with sunlight.
That's right.
And so, you know, so what do we want to do, Phil?
Well, I mean, thermal mass is something you want to consider.
Oh, yeah, that's a big one. Because that's sort of like the yang to the yin. You've got a heat source, which is the sun.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're going to use something to absorb, to be like the...
Right, you need a battery.
You need a battery.
Essentially, you need something that absorbs this heat and stores it.
Right.
So it gathers it during the day, and it releases it at night when you really need it. And then the battery runs out in the morning, and then recharges itself during the day.
Right. So, imagine a greenhouse. I mean, because really that's what we're talking about. Mm-hmm. A greenhouse, it's a big glass box. The sun rises, it cooks in there. I mean, it cooks a lot. I mean, lots of heat. Basically, light enters, gets transformed into long wave radiation, which is heat, and then it's trapped in the glass. And so, you know, and then the sun sets, and then what happens? Boom! That heat just like is gone. Mm-hmm. It's gone. There's no insulation, no nothing. So we need to strike the right balance of glazing to insulated wall to thermal mass, and then we do that, and we have this really comfortable, nice space, and we haven't put an ounce of energy. Of artificial energy in it, so
that's right.
So, like, do you have any rules of thumb yourself for glazing? Like, what, like, how much glass do I want to put where? Rules of thumb like prevail in this particular subject.
They do. And honestly, I don't really go by rules of thumb. I go by the energy model, to tell you the truth. And we know try to get as much glass to the south as possible, and as little to the north as possible.
But before you do an energy model, you need to have a design to do an energy model too. Yeah. Yes. So I know you and I operate, and I think I said this on the previous podcast, 90% of green architecture is intuition. Mm-hmm. It's like getting a real feel. You know, you see these models, you do the house, and you repeat, you know, over and over again. Mm-hmm. Pretty soon you get a good feeling for the amount of glass you want versus not. And I think a good rule of thumb is 12%
of the square footage of the house.
Right. So you have the square footage of the house.
That's what they say.
Yeah, they being those five guys in New York. Yeah. And you know who they are.
Yeah, I
know. Enough said.
Yeah.
So,
Steinbrenner is one of them, isn't he?
No, not anymore.
He's not? Okay.
No, he got kicked out by the other four, so that now there's a new fifth.
Oh, God.
But anyway, I digress. So, I think a good rule of thumb is to get somewhere between 10 and 15% of your glazing of the square foot of your house as glazing on the south wall. And then I think for the east and west, it's like 3 or 4%. is what usually the model
is. And north is zero, right?
And north is zero. There is no, as far as an energy model is concerned, there's no benefit to northern light. But you and I know, we're architects and humans. Mm-hmm. Northern light, you know, if I'm an artist, have you ever had an artist as a client? What do they always say? They say, I want lots of northern light.
Yeah.
Because northern light's indirect light. It's all shadowless. And so you can get awesome color rendering and all that from that light.
Yeah, I remember fighting an artist once that I designed a studio for. And we had a big northern skylight of all things.
Right. Oh, man. You know, so there's a double whammy there.
Looks, yeah.
Yeah.
We did it, and the place looked good, but...
Awesome. Photographed really well, I'll bet.
I don't have a single photograph of the place.
Oh, really? Oh, one of those. Oh.
Yeah.
Well...
It was an early one.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure they're listening and enjoying this podcast. Anyway, So, all right. Now we're getting to the nitty-gritty, though. So this glazing that we just put... And we did an extensive podcast on windows, but...
Yes.
The really cool thing, what makes you a real cool designer is if you design a shading device or something, you design something that's going to cut off the sun because you don't want it in the summertime, but you'll allow it in the wintertime.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's not even being a cool designer, although...
No, it's actually being a designer, right?
Right, yeah.
I mean, that's what we're talking about, is going back to the basics. Like, honestly, if you have a design, and you and I know, we've seen them, they're a beautiful, well-photographed, awesome-looking things, but you know darn well, from an energy efficiency, from a, you know, standpoint, a place on the earth, power goes out, that place sucks, you know. Mm-hmm. But
yeah, so if you are looking to do true passive solar, you're going to start with windows to the south that have a different solar heat gain coefficient.
That's right.
Right. So you're going to allow heat into these windows. That's the whole point of these windows on the south side.
Right.
So that means you've got to take advantage of what the sun's giving you. So
that's right.
In the summertime, it's going to allow you to shade because it's going to be high in the sky. So the angle of the summertime sun here in Maine is about 67 degrees is what I usually think of.
I think it's like 71 or 2, like June 21st or whatever.
Right.
Summer solstice. But
and then the lowest, I think about 23 or so. Is that right?
Kind of low for us.
Yeah.
Yeah. So basically...
Way down there. So, but the sun is doing us a favor.
Right. Oh, you know what we should have done? We should have prepared more and given some people some good web addresses for sun... calculators, solar angle calculators. But the great thing is...
All right, I'll look it up and maybe we'll throw them in when we talk to Jesse.
Awesome.
While you're scrambling to get
them. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, we'll do that.
Okay.
But basically, what you can do, and this, again, here's where intuition really gets into it, is when you know the angles of the sun, like let's say at noon, or pick a good time, noon, of, you know, winter, summer, and then pick an equinox. And then all of a sudden you can see like this solar angle that you want to capture and when you want to start cutting. And your energy model will start telling you when you want to start cutting off that heat gain and where that happens. But usually with these angles, you can kind of project these angles and figure out how you want to shade your window. And usually I like to make it so like at if you make an overhang, for example, that makes it so you have zero direct light in your window, during summer, but all of it during winter. That's a pretty darn good overhang.
That's it.
You're just designed for it. Well, it's nigh perfect. Anyways.
Right. Right. Depending
on
you know, and the reality of it is that you can't design for June 21st and.
Right. Exactly.
You know,
December 21st.
Day.
Right.
Exactly. It's nice to handle those things. But you're going to have August at 3 p.m.
Right.
Knocking you out at some point if you're not careful.
I want to go back to you mentioned the on like two previous. We don't have that many podcasts in the bank here, but in like two of them, I talked about going to double pane or not doing the triple pane, super solar heat gain coefficient glazing on the south. I still kind of stand by that, but Martin Holliday's article that he wrote. That like came out like the day after that we did that podcast. He brings up that there's sort of like smart glass. There's that film that sometimes it depends where that film is on the glazing. Like if that film is on the interior part of the glazing, like if you have a triple pane window and the film that's bouncing the long wave energy, is on the interior part, then you actually still are capturing some of that heat, mm-hmm. as in that heat is being generated mm-hmm. or captured by that window. So it's not as bad as like previous calculations would indicate. But I would still stand by the fact that double pane is probably bang for the buck. You know, you got to see what your whole house is doing before you spend that extra money of triple pane.
But, you do. I mean, the truth of it, Chris, is that true passive solar is hard.
It's hard.
Everything has to go right.
That's
and
right.
You and I have both seen buildings that are true passive solar. They're right. spaceships. They ain't beautiful in the past.
Yeah,
and even the current ones. There's some brilliant engineers out there who have done true passive solar and people who are passionate about this. And they are freaking ugly.
Yeah,
they've got Sheila, don't give me that look. I'm not going to say that.
Yeah, it was close.
She had to beat me last
time. She was really close.
Yeah,
she had her hand on the button.
I paused for her and I gave her the look.
Yeah, I know. She was ready.
They're ugly, okay?
Yeah.
They're like
the RB Solarium. That's like,
right.
I live, where's your house? Oh, it's right there. It is the RB Solarium.
Right, it's a fast food restaurant and a spaceship.
Right,
somewhere in between.
Exactly.
Those are the true passive solar
structures.
Those
don't work, usually. Yeah. I mean, well, I'm sorry.
Yeah, so a lot of those don't work. And the ones that we're doing today, and the engineers who are really smart who are doing them, some of them are frankly not beautiful. And you know what? I have an issue with that.
Well, I do too.
Yeah, and I know
you do. But you go ahead.
Yeah, so if, you know, passive solar is all well and good, but man, there are other ways to do this too.
Yeah.
You know, if there are other priorities, if you've got a view to the west, then... You're not going to just try to do a true passive solar house.
No.
You're going to do the best you can.
That's right. I've dealt with it. I'm just recently. It's like the view, you know, beautiful lake to the northwest.
Yeah.
Yikes.
Yeah.
But yet we still try. We do. You try to balance it and do the best you can.
You do the best you can. And sometimes you just have to put triple glazed everywhere and assume that there's going to be heat loss. You have to use coverings on your windows at night.
Yeah.
You know, there's issues because you have to rely a lot on humans.
Right.
And us humans don't always want to do what's best for us because...
Because we want to do what makes us feel good.
Yeah.
All the time.
And you know what? I'm tired and I don't feel like putting up the window quilts.
I want to go to bed.
Forget grandma knitted for me, you know? It's a horrible word.
It is a horrible word.
I don't want window quilts on my windows.
Yeah, and they got little geese with bows around their necks.
Yeah, that's right. Apple pies.
Bright blue. Yeah. Little babies with bonnets. Little kids with bonnets and cute shoes.
Yeah, they're cellular
Maybe
shades
some
that
cows.
You can use. They're better than the quilt. But
that's
it's
nice.
A horrible
cellular
name.
Shades.
Yeah. Doesn't it sound a little more technical?
Oh, that sounds much better.
It sounds
advanced.
Yeah. So we think about the sun, but then...
Honey, would you close these cellular shades, please? As opposed...
Certainly, doctor.
Right. Did you close the window quilts before you go to bed? See, now I'm offending. I don't even know what accent that was.
Is that Eunice?
I said Eustace.
You know what
Eustace.
That...
Eustace. I don't know what that's from. I know exactly where I got that name from, but I'm not saying it. So, never mind.
You can tell me later.
Now I'll tell you later, off air. But
all right, so passive solar is a wonderful thing. We have to consider the sun, but I still think that design comes first.
Well,
so
yeah, it's like...
There's very few true passive solar buildings out there, and the conditions have to be just right. Doesn't mean you don't need overhangs. It doesn't mean... You don't specify different windows on all sides of the building, at least different windows on south than you do from west and north. And
exactly. But and you do run east. Into that scenario where I've already reached my 4% for east or west or something like that. But, you know, light from one side is not a happy thing.
Good point. You're going.
You get glare. Mm-hmm. Like there's a great cafe right down the street I get coffee at, but... at which I get coffee. And, boy, the glare is just awful. It's just like one whole side, it's a deep space, and one whole side is glazed, and just one. So it's like you turn around, and the rendering in there is just terrible.
You can't see the person sitting next to
you. Oh, yeah, I've told them a million times. All you need to do, just put a window here. And I'm telling them to do an energy inefficient thing, and I know it,
mm-hmm.
But I bet their patronage would increase 10%.
Well, our...
How about that?
Our very important tangent here is that a true sustainable building has to be beautiful.
That's right. It has to be beautiful.
Yeah.
It has to touch... It has to reach... Maybe this is the beer talking, but it has to really, you know, engage your artful mind. That's the phrase I like to say. It makes you... It's filled with life and light, and... The good news is that most of the time, that's also a passive solar. You're getting a lot of south light. We gravitate towards it. So, I mean, that's usually a good design, is usually an energy efficient design, I've learned.
Yeah. Not always. Usually. I mean, it's got to work out. It's got to feel good if someone's going to tear it down.
Yeah.
I don't care how passive your solar is.
Did we talk about thermal mass enough? I don't know. You know what? I tell you what, let's check in with Jesse. And then
we can determine whether or not we talk about it.
Exactly. We'll have a moment or two. So.
Yes,
so.
I have an idea. I do. I have a potential hot zig.
Do you? Awesome. I can't wait.
All right. Well,
let's go check in with Jesse. Let's go down to the basement, see if he's tipped anything over or how he's feeling. and we'll come back and touch base.
Okay.
All right. All right, here we are. We've made it to the basement. We found Jesse back in the corner. Jesse, how are you?
I'm okay.
Just okay, buddy? Aw.
I'm always okay.
I know. So something's bothering you, and you need to work it out with us.
Well, I heard you guys talking about passive solar.
You were listening. That's great.
Yeah, so passive solar, there's something that bothers me about passive solar, and that's the passive solar guys.
Whoa. The guys themselves.
They're almost always guys. No, not like you guys. Oh. They're these passive solar guys, and they're probably listening to the show, hopefully, but there's something about passive solar that attracts a certain kind of guy, and it's this tinkering guy. The guy who is an amateur engineer who's always convinced there's another 5% to squeeze out of the building somewhere if we just come up with the perfect engineering solution. So these guys end up with things like sand beds under their buildings. And conduit in their slabs, and fans that run all the time that are trying to move air around the building, and they get caught up in things like envelope houses, which were sort of this famous spectacular failure that comes back every 10 years with someone deciding that's going to save the world.
Right.
And what's bothering me is it's pretty clear that we know how to do great buildings, but that they're just hard to do and they don't involve fancy tricks. You got to do air sealing right. You got to do lots of insulation. You got to do nice windows. It's kind of boring. It's kind of tedious. It kind of means you got to have contractors who are willing to really, you know, buckle down and do the hard stuff.
Right, and do it right. And you're not going to solve it with some
magic machine under your slab.
If I do a geodesic dome for the whole house, then I've...
That's right. It's the sort of engineering will save the world mindset, as opposed to, we know how to do it, let's just go on.
And is this a modern mindset? Are you talking about the old,
this has been going on since...
The hippie dude who's like, he's been working on... he's got his, you know, half of his house is this glass box, and the other half is the next thing he was doing.
And he's got big barrels of water. Yeah, he's got barrels of water in a greenhouse.
I love those guys. I mean, I gotta say, I love those guys. But you're saying I'm trying to design a rudimentary building here that's got some core principles to it, and...
Yeah.
And let's not get sidetracked.
What bothers me is it's a distraction. Is that we know how to get 99% of the way there just by doing more insulation and doing good air sealing and just doing things pretty, just careful, good buildings. And when we start talking about sand beds, we're just adding this huge level of complexity, a huge level of machinery, and then the things don't work. We've got this 30-year, we're 40-year history now of people with houses that have these strange machines that they don't use anymore that are down in their crawl space.
Huh.
And when you Google passive solar, you get these people. There's books are on Amazon. They're everywhere. Yeah, so.
But you're not poo-pooing passive solar per se.
No,
you're saying you got to do these other things first, and then passive solar is a really nice idea, but you got to do insulation.
And passive solar is put some windows on the south side of the building.
Yeah.
Don't put as many on the north side. It's
shade them
not
right.
Particularly complicated.
Right.
And so. That maybe that's not complicated enough. Maybe that's the problem, is it's not exciting enough. And we need magic sand beds with fluid running through them and,
make the shades out of sandbags.
Insulating shades.
Insulation, yeah.
How about insulating shades that trap condensation against the windows and rot them out?
All right.
We did
mention window quilts.
Window quilts. Those guys like window quilts, too.
Yeah.
Those are the kind of, or the big foam
that,
panel
that your mom's made for them.
That's right. Right.
Yeah. Or the big foam panel that the homeowner is supposed to put against the windows every night.
Right. And see, those guys, they will do that. But our client, if I say, I've got it, here, here's a big, take this piece of rigid foam, we've fastened a handle to it. Yeah. Okay, before you go to bed, you know, when you're done tucking in the kids, I want you to go around the house and put,
It's so easy. You know, I had a friend who was a big car guy once.
Yeah.
And he got upset with me because I didn't rotate my tires every 5,000 miles. He said, why don't you just do it? It's so easy. All you got to do is just
you
do
don't,
it.
You don't rotate your tires every...
Hands up. Not me, man.
No, I'm kidding. I'm terrible at that.
And I said, I'm never, ever going to do it. I'm just not going to do it. Eventually, I'll get around to it. But that's just not me. It's important to you. But
So you're saying the client should know when they're talking to guys like us. They should go in kind of prepared to say, you know what, I wish I were the kind of guy who, you know, would do that sort of thing, like go around and move these things and seasonally change all this stuff, but I'm never going to do it. And they should kind of be aware. That's what you're saying?
Mm-hmm. Well, also, we need tougher houses.
All right.
We need houses that don't take a really enlightened homeowner tuning it like a sailboat every night.
Yeah.
So there's people who love their sailboats and they go out and they'll, you know, reef the sails or whatever. I'm not a sailor. But who enjoy operating a machine. Yeah. But we can do great houses that don't need operating like a machine, that don't need to trim their sails. And we should get on with it.
And to me, that's not a sustainable solution in and of itself.
Let's just go make great houses. Let's stop trying to engineer our way out of it.
Let's make great houses. And
we know the answers.
Stop being a... So summing up what's bothering you is...
I'm saying
No, I'm sorry. I shouldn't.
He did not say hippies.
No, he didn't. I did.
So hippies have saved the world. We wouldn't be having this conversation without hippies.
God bless hippies.
I'm just saying.
Lest I forget.
There's this tendency to get a little complicated with some things that are pretty simple.
Keep it simple.
Keep it simple.
All right. Thanks, Jesse.
Thanks, Jesse.
Anytime.
You're listening to the Green Architects Lounge podcast, hosted by Chris Briley and Phil Kaplan. Chris is the principal architect at the Green Design Studio in Yarmouth, Maine, and Phil is a principal of Kaplan Thompson Architects in Portland, Maine. The theme music is Zelda's Theme by Perez Prado, and Jesse's intro music is Touch Me by Spank Rock. You can download these tracks and other fine music at the iTunes Store. If you'd like to request a topic for the program, would like to comment on a previous episode, or if you just want to let us know you're listening, Chris and Phil would love to hear from you. You can email them at galounge@yahoo.com. Now back to the Green Architects Lounge.
And we're back. That's nice. I love touching base with Jesse. Keeps me grounded. He's a good guy.
It wakes me up.
It wakes me up a little.
Yeah.
Good old Jesse. Anyway, you said you had a hot zig for me.
I'd love to tell you.
I'm ready.
All right,
I'm ready.
You remember Greenbuild last year?
You mean where you won an award?
No, not that one.
Oh, okay.
Where I was still a nothing loser.
Oh, that one. I remember really well.
You and I actually went to that one together. You remember that? In Boston.
Oh, that's right. Oh, yeah, in Boston. Yeah, we did. We did.
I went to the workshop. It was this workshop that, I think you were in a different one.
We were not in the same workshop. Yeah.
A builder from Colorado.
We carpooled, and I remember cracking the window. I'm kidding.
That's right. Every house that he builds, this guy from Colorado, this builder, two layers of sheetrock. You know why?
I'm going to guess.
Mm-hmm.
Thermal mass?
Ding, ding, ding.
Wow. Whoa, two layers of like what? Like half inch? Two layers?
Yeah,
like
two layers of half inch. Because why not? It just...
Well, it would work.
More thermal mass. I haven't tested it yet.
But that's a significant amount of added thermal mass, isn't
it? And it's
it?
Hard to run the numbers. You can't really do that in a standard energy model.
Well, someone can. Well, yeah,
someone
actually,
can.
No, that's a good point, though.
And,
every time I mention thermal mass, I watch energy modeler people go, because it's a very spongy number to deal with.
Yeah, REM rate can't handle it.
Right, REM rate doesn't do it.
You just turn to a smart engineer.
Right, you need to go to a whole different level to start doing nuanced things like thermal mass because it's spooky science that's just it's all intuitive. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know,
but you know, there's something interesting there. I don't know.
There is. That seems like a lot. Well, maybe though, because you don't have to finish the first one,
right?
And you stagger the seams. I'm guessing just mm-hmm. to be because that's what you do when you have multiplies of
right.
anything.
I don't know. It must help your airtight drywall system.
Maybe. Well, that's interesting. I'm going to tell you that I've got a pet product then.
Oh.
So, my pet product is that BASF. You know those guys.
I used to
make tape cassettes.
Yeah, back. I remember. They made Memorex.
Yeah. Well, they, you know, a lot of chemical stuff. Anyway, they make a sheetrock with little paraffin beads in them. And these paraffin beads, they melt. They change state at around 72 degrees. So, they increase the effective thermal mass of that product.
Really?
Yeah. So, if you boil water. No, let's say you're melting ice. You put in heat. You know, I've got ice in my glass. It takes forever to warm this thing up because the ice is in it, and all that energy is going into changing the state of the ice into a liquid. Mm-hmm. And then once it is a liquid, then boom, it takes off and goes faster. So that mm-hmm. energy of changing state, it takes more energy than it is. All that phase change stuff that yeah. like went out in the 70s.
No,
I know what happened with those, like, you know, phase change salts or whatever. Anyway, these guys have incorporated these little paraffin beads within the sheetrock. You don't even see it or notice it, and it increases its effective. So there's my pet
thermal mass.
Thermal mass, yeah. So there's my pet product.
Really? So that yeah. is in lieu of
maybe two instead layers. Of buying another layer. You know, you use this stuff. I don't know what's exact. I just learned about, you know, a while ago. So, and if I were more prepared, I would have had something. But
fascinating,
it is. And while we're on the when we're, all, I'll share another rule of thumb.
Please
for thermal mass.
Yeah.
If you've got like 4 inches of concrete, like slab on grade type of thing, and you have for every square foot of southern glazing, mm-hmm. you want about 3 square feet. Of concrete, so that gives you a rough idea that gets direct sunlight. If it doesn't get direct sunlight and you don't have it, then you want like about 6 times that. So it gives you an idea of the amount of thermal mass you want to use.
And yeah. So Chris,
yeah,
do you have to have slab on grade if you have passive solar?
No. No, you don't have to.
But it helps.
It does help. You know, slab on grid is, you know, a lot of the green guys, you and I, you know, we're mm-hmm. we're proponents of it. And usually when you start doing, you know, the thing you hear up here is, you know, if you're digging down 4 feet to beat the frost anyway, you might as well dig down another 4 and get a basement that you can use. But mm-hmm. as, you know, Pat Coon, right? He's a guy. Well. He will be on when we talk about active solar. But he's a guy who said that's, you know, basements are the cheapest space you never use. You know, it's a great line because yeah. it's true. And so, like, you can use a slab on grade, get your thermal mass, and stay up out of the ground and you know, do that. But
the only way to keep water out of your basement
is not to have a basement.
Not to have one. That's the only way.
Well, see, I always say as long as I have a place to put it, I can drink. I can give you a dry basement. As long as I have a place to put the water. As in, if I have positive drainage, if I can get daylight off of a, you know, drain, then we're all set. Otherwise, you know, you got to do other. Oh, that's a different podcast. But
it's a different one. But
but I've done suspended slabs all the time. Do that all day long, which is basically you've got, you know, joists, your regular wood floor. You got, I-joists or, you know, wood joists.
Whatever it is.
Sheathing, and then do 2 inches of either lightweight concrete or a concrete with a, you know, a light aggregate or an aggregate that's, you know, a smaller aggregate so it can flow around the tubes. But basically, have a radiant slab. And, man, that has awesome thermal mass qualities to it. And I'm going to go. Here's an anecdote. I wasn't even ready for this. But,
oh,
yeah,
great.
Yeah, yeah.
Love to hear.
So there's this house that we're working on, and it's going to have a passive solar design. And it's one of those things where the male, you know, there's always a male and female in these couples where the male is, not always, but, you
not
know,
always.
Okay,
not
that's
at
true.
All, actually.
The male component of this couple mm-hmm. is really concerned about air conditioning. He's like, yeah, but I want to have air conditioning. And she's like,
it's because we sweat, Chris.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but he's not a big fella or anything like that. Just or a sweaty guy. He just doesn't want. It's uncomfortable in the heat.
I know.
I don't blame him. Yeah. And so, but I say to him, I say to everybody, yeah, but in here in Maine, you know, you just don't need the air conditioning because rarely is it, you know, above 70 even at nighttime, even on those hot days or whatever like that. And I'm like, plus you got thermal mass. You know, we have two suspended slabs. You got the slab in the basement. Got a big masonry fireplace. You got a suspended slab first floor, suspended slab second floor. There's a lot of thermal mass in this thing. Mm-hmm. And it's really well insulated. Mm-hmm. And we're really well shaded in the summertime. And we let this, you know, it's a passive solar design. It's great. And I'm like, it's going to feel like there's air conditioning. And of course, they don't believe me. None of them believe me. And sure enough, you know, like I show up. It is, you know, there's like 1 week, maybe two, but usually...
Right, it's
one,
in August,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. 1 week here in Maine where it is hot and muggy. And you're like, wow, why did I move to Maine? It's really hot. And no one has air conditioning. So you go, and I show up on site, I walk into the house, you know, and it's, the construction is near complete at this phase, you know. It's like finishes are on and all this jazz. And, you know, the builder's on the outside doing stuff, you know, good friend of mine, Josh. And I walk inside, and man, it feels like the air conditioning's on. It feels like there's air conditioning on. And I said to myself, man, there better not be air conditioning in this place. They had better not have sneaked it in during construction.
You're going to bleep somebody up.
I was just like, you know, either there, I was just going to go, fine, you know, if they want it, fine, you know, whatever. And I walk outside, and the builder's there, and he's just like, hey, you like that air conditioning we put in? And I just start, I'm like, I cannot believe it. And he's like, nah, I'm kidding. That's just the thermal mass. It works. And we're like, woohoo, all right, it worked. Wow, how about that? It actually worked. So,
but
yeah,
he had you for a minute.
He absolutely had me. And that's a testament. And in the same house, it's like they had instances where, you know, people are visiting and you know, they're like, you know, kids running in and out. And they're like, shut the door, letting the air conditioning out. And my clients got to say, well, actually, we don't have air conditioning. They're like, what? How are you? What? But the windows are shut, and you're. How are you doing? It's passive solar design. You're doing
that's
it right.
Great.
That's thermal mass.
Brilliant, Chris.
All right.
Nice job.
So I do. Before we go, I do have a six-digit idea.
I want to hear it.
Do you want to hear it? Okay. And this is a six-digit idea that's been poo-pooed by smart people over and over again, but okay. Yet I cling
but,
to it. I cling to it like a...
I don't cling to the label of smart myself, so I...
Oh, yeah?
I may love this idea.
I'm clinging to it like a wet cat to the rope on the side of a boat. I'm just like... I think it's a great idea. The ship is sailing, and I can hang on to it.
Visuals.
Ah, visuals.
For an audio podcast are brilliant, I must
Well, good, because we need them, because, you know, spice this thing up. Anyway, it's the cold climate refrigerator.
Cold climate.
Yeah, dumb. Okay, I find it dumb that we're in Maine.
Yeah, I know where you're going.
Yeah, I know. See, like everybody's is. I'm not the first to have this idea. I know I'm not. Every time I bring this up to smart mechanical engineer type,
it's the kind of thing that you got a refrigerator, but the back of it opens up to the elements.
Yeah,
I like it. Okay. I wondered why we don't have something like that.
I know, because it seems dumb to me that we take this box that we live in, and we heat it up, and then we make another box that we put our food in, and we cool it down. Mm-hmm. It's inside the warm. So we're in the cold, we have a warm box, and we put a cold box inside the hot box. It seems like a waste. And you know, every time you pump in this energy, like I've heard, you know, there's always 30%. It's almost always even the most efficient transition when you're transferring heat from one thing to another in some methodology. There's usually a 30% loss of some kind. So I'm like, you know, why don't we have... Like, imagine this cold climate refrigerator.
Yes.
It's got venting.
Yeah.
You know, that you just hook up ductwork to it. Hopefully, you're putting it on the exterior wall.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So that there's no insulation. So the exterior wall comes in and around this thing and then seals to, boom, this refrigerator.
Uh-huh.
Okay? No, most refrigerators are not designed for that because, you know, usually the bottoms of them and all the, you know, they've got their own ventilation and all that jazz. And whenever I talk to mechanical engineers, they're like, yeah, but you know when the refrigerator is creating cold inside the box, it's shoving heat outside the box because it is a classic heat pump. So it's really heating your house. So you're heating your house and it's heating your house. It's just separating the heat and the cold, so it's really not that efficient. It's not worth all that energy. I'm like, no. I mean, I believe it, and that's true.
But what if I could turn it off for a couple months? I mean, we're talking about net zero homes.
Exactly.
And we're really getting down to it. Oh, I better turn off this fluorescent light bulb for 5 minutes when I leave the room.
Right.
If we're down to that level,
right?
For God's sakes, if you could turn off your refrigerator for a freaking month. Freaking, Sheila, freaking.
Freaking is not, it's a different word. In fact, you were using the more Midwestern freaking with the I as opposed to the E.
Yeah, I use the freaking instead of the freaking.
Right.
Yeah, that's just me.
That is you. Yeah. That's unexpected from you.
Yeah.
But oh well.
I like that. Throwing a little dose of surprise every now and then, Chris.
So what's
if we start talking about real net zero homes.
Right.
Absolutely.
Right.
There's something there.
I mean, because...
You know? Turn off your...
For goodness sake. How about that? For goodness sake, for crying out loud. I mean, you could not have a refrigerator running for half the year up here.
All right, I like it.
All right, great.
Somebody else
run with it. Make it happen.
Can I talk about some music?
Please.
All right.
Take us out.
There's a band that now probably 90% of America knows, except for Chris Brierley.
Vampire Weekend.
Yeah, they've gotten around. And actually, they're a very polarizing band. You love them or you hate them. Most people love them, actually. They're pretty popular.
I'm going to find out because I don't...
Music snobs are having a hard time with it.
Oh, really?
They're a little too fun.
Oh, well, that's not... I'm probably not going to have a problem with
no,
that.
No, you're going to like these guys.
All right, great.
Yeah. It's their new album, Contra, which was just released last week.
Yeah.
And it's the first song of it called Horchata.
Horchata.
You know what horchata is?
No, but can I drink it?
You can.
Really?
I think it's
guessing.
It's like a root drink of sorts. I think it's like a...
Well, this is not the drink that like you chew first. Like you take leaves and like the ladies of the tribe chew on this particular leaf and then they spit it
in
a
bowl. That sounds incredibly disgusting.
It is. No. Or I don't know where I learned that. Where did I learn that? If it's not
please
that.
Don't integrate that into your drink next podcast.
All right. You know, maybe I'll just edit all that out. Didn't need to be there.
Ladies and gentlemen,
yeah.
Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
We've had a wonderful time.
Yeah.
Thanks for your patience.
Good. And we muddled through that one, didn't we? Jeez. Passive solar design. We should all be doing it. Every house should be a passive house, shouldn't it? A passive solar house, sorry. At least, well.
You always think of it.
Okay.
Vampire Weekend, Horchata. Chris, Horchata. Nice to see you.
Nice to see you, Phil. See you guys in a couple weeks.
Cheers. Glasses at that Aranciada with lips and teeth to ask how my day went. Boots and fists to pound on the pavement. Here comes a feeling you thought you'd forgotten. Just to sit in sidewalks to walk on. You say
start to rot in those palms and furs that grew in your garden. I'm falling down and nearing the rose bears and the roots shooting up through the tool sheds. Those lips and teeth that as time my day when I'm shouting.